Thank you all for coming. I want to add warm welcome from more of myself to all of you here. Whatever stage you're at and thinking about using teaching English for church mission. Obviously, there are lots of other ways to do mission and cross-cultural mission for churches, not just teaching English, but we're just focusing in on one particular way, we believe, and we've seen evidence that teaching English in a local community is a wonderful tool, a wonderful ministry, a wonderful way of connecting with the nations in our communities. So that's what we're going to be talking about today. And this is what we're going to break it down into effectively. First of all, we're going to be thinking a little bit from the book of Acts, because that's the theme of the conference. And especially I want to just think about the direction of movement of mission in Acts 1 to 12. After that, we're going to think a little bit more about our current context, which obviously reflects what we hear in the news. Then we're going to reverse engineer and think, what would we all love to see? And we'll do that by telling a couple of stories of internationals who have come to faith and then work backwards from there. That's in a local church context, obviously, through English language teaching. To how do we actually, in terms of the mechanics, how do we set something up where we can have stories like that in our own churches? Then we want to address the question, you know, does it have to be a fantastic big church with loads of resources? Can anybody do this? We're going to say yes. And then Maura's going to offer some helps and resources so that we don't have to reinvent the wheel and try to think about doing everything ourselves, but we can learn from other churches and we can share resources. So let's just start with a little think about early gospel movement. I think in my mind, when I think of the difference between evangelism and mission, I often think of movement and intentional movement. M for mission, M for missionary, M for movement. That helps it keep clear in my mind. Whereas evangelism is sharing the faith much more locally. There is movement and cross-cultural movement involved in mission. I think that would be a good distinction. We've been thinking about Acts 1 and 2 already, and in Acts 2, you've heard from Matt yesterday that there are 15, Luke didn't need to mention 15 places, but he happened to go around the compass listing. These were God-fearing Jews in Jerusalem from all nations under heaven, and he lists them out. There they are. But notice the movement. The apostles, the disciples, Peter, I guess they didn't preach from the upper room. I guess they just moved outside. Whereas these who heard the gospel from these nations under heaven, they'd moved all over the Mediterranean world. Physicists, and my lowest ever score at school was 23% in a physics test, so don't take my word for it. David is here, an engineer, he can just correct me if I'm wrong. Talk about centrifugal forces going out and centripetal forces coming in. And here we see some centripetal mission, much like the Old Testament. In the Old Testament, of course, most of the mission envisaged to the nations was people coming in to Jerusalem, with the odd exception, like Jonah, or perhaps the last chapter of Isaiah. But it's not just Acts 2 where we see centripetal mission. Acts 8, the Ethiopian eunuch. Maura and I, as Eleanor said, we served for 11 years in Ethiopia. This perhaps was a slightly different region, perhaps what we'd call southern Sudan today. And it's very interesting what people in those days thought when they heard the word Ethiopia. Here's Homer. I'm sure you're all Homer scholars here. The Ethiopians that are sundered in twain, the farthermost of men. Some live by the setting sun, the others where it rises. That's in Odyssey. When people in that period heard the word Ethiopia, they thought, as we do, Timbuktu, the most far place that you could possibly imagine, which reminds us, of course, of Acts 1:8, to the ends of the earth. If anyone was from the ends of the earth, as he rode off in his chariot into the sunset, it was this Ethiopian. Philip moved some, yes. He was part of the scattered bunch, Acts chapter 8, verse 1, who moved out him north to Samaria, then south to this desert road. But the Ethiopian, well, he moved a lot further. Centripetal mission. And finally, just in this quick survey of Acts 1 to 12, Cornelius. Now, Cornelius, of course, you remember which regiment he was centurion of? The Italian regiment. And who ministered to him? You'd have thought it would be Paul, wouldn't you? He'd had his call to cross-cultural mission in Acts chapter 9. But actually, who ministered to him? Kicking and screaming, Peter. Peter had moved some. He'd moved from Jerusalem out into the Judean countryside. The right-hand map there shows where he went, Lydda, Joppa. And then he was called up to Caesarea. Whereas the centurion, Cornelius, if he wasn't Italian, he was certainly from a lot further afield. All this to say, alongside centrifugal mission, sending out, which dominates the second half of the book of Acts, we have in vision here also, from the Old Testament and continuing, the idea of central petal mission, where God brings people in. And I don't know about you, but that reminds me much of the 21st century UK situation, where God's servants may move some, but the gospel recipients may move a lot further. Maura.
So we're all familiar, aren't we, with the men of Issachar who understood the times. And we thought today we would just try to look at the context we're in the UK at the moment by doing a little quiz. Maybe we could just hand out some papers here. On the front of the handout, you will see something like this. So this is the Common European Framework of Reference for English Language Acquisition. And on your paper in front of you, you have four questions. Question 1A and 1B refer to this table, and then 2 and 3 don't. So what I'd like you to do, and what I suggest you do, is in your little groups, and this is partly why the room looks like this, is if one person reads out the questions, and then you just have a quick fire answer, so your gut feeling to these questions, and then we'll come back and look at them together. So can you do that? If you're on your own, you might want to go and find somebody to do it with. Okay, great. Thank you. So we're going to kind of flick through these quite quickly, but on the back of your handouts, there is a piece of paper like this that says references. All the reports and statistics that we refer to are on here, and you can look them up and you can get a bit better picture of what's actually going on. But let's just go through them very quickly together. So number one, looking at the CEFR table, what level of language acquisition do you think a skilled worker or someone applying for settlement status in the UK is required to have? Anybody? Who said that? Advanced? Yeah, any advance on advance?
Is it changing this year from one to another?
Oh, somebody knows. Yes, it is. It is. You're absolutely right. So currently, anybody wanting to apply for those visas has to be at a B1 level, which if you look at your thing is lower intermediate. So this is somebody that can converse with you as long as you're talking not too quickly and can have a conversation with you. That's the level that's at. But as I don't know what your name is, Rosalind said, it's changing. And the government has just written a paper called the White Paper. They do a green paper, a blue paper. It's white paper at the moment. And in that paper, they are going to implement a change in the level from January, and it will go up to B2, which doesn't sound very much of a jump, but it actually is. It's a higher level, intermediate level, and it is a big jump. So looking at the next one. What level of English language ability are dependents required to have? Anybody? None. Anybody else? Basic. Okay, you're both right. So currently, you don't have to have anything at all. If you're a dependent, nothing's required of you. But from January, you're going to have a basic level. It's A1 elementary. And if you apply for a subsequent visa, you will have to show evidence that you are progressing in English. Great. So question 3. What countries did most seasonal workers coming to the UK in 2025 come from? Anybody? Albania? Poland? Romania? Nigeria. Okay, great. There is a paper. It's called Halfway Around the World, Central Asian Workers on British Farms, 2025. Most seasonal workers came from Kyrgyzstan, Tajikistan, Kazakhstan and Uzbekistan. And yeah, whoa, it is incredible. And they're coming in hordes. And this is really due to the war between Russia and Ukraine. So many of the Central Asian workers were expelled out of Russia, and Central Asian governments are actively looking for places where people can go and find work. And so we have something called UK Seasonal Worker Visa, and it's become the hottest ticket in town for Central Asia. So next question. Here we are. How the world's population is estimated at 8.2 billion people in 2025. How many of these people would you estimate to be English speakers? Is anybody brave enough to shout something out there? 1 billion. 1 billion. You are so close. And so surprising. 1.5 billion people. It is the most widely spoken language in the world at the moment, with Mandarin following on and Spanish coming after that, which doesn't surprise any of us. But what is really interesting is that English as a native language only makes up a quarter of that number. So there's 390 million people, native English language speakers, at the moment in the world. So that 75% is made up of English as a second language. So this is people learning English outside of their home. That's quite astonishing, I think. So just thinking about those facts and figures, what opportunities does this provide for us as a UK church at this time? Well, firstly, this jump in levels of English language, the local government are committed to provide English language lessons at B1 and B2 level. But there is going to be a massive gap. There's going to be a movement away from teaching at lower levels. So that's the elementary level and up to B1. This is a great opportunity for us as churches to come in and fill that gap. Just thinking about unreached nations, Central Asia, they are flooding into our country. If you are living in the south of England, is anybody in the south of England here? Kent, Cornwall, they are coming to the farms near you. So apple farms, I love it. They're coming to the zucchini farms in Cornwall, tomato farms, they come. And they often will stay for 2 or 3 years until they've made the amount of money they want to make before going back again. So again, we need to get out there. We need to see where they are and invite them into our churches. I noticed that in the FIEC booklet, there's something here about Kyrgyzstan and the fact that 90% of the population are Islamic. This is a massive opportunity for us. They're coming to us. Are we ready for them? And just lastly, there's a great paper that I'd encourage you to read. Actually, Eleanor sent it to me, but it's by a guy called Seth Porch. And it's called A Tongue for Every Tribe, How English Serves the Global Church. And he says, throughout church history, God has used common languages to serve the global mission of the church. Today, English is the largest common language in the world. We have a massive opportunity to grab hold of that and to run with it.
I thought it'd just be interesting to see who's in the room and why a little bit. Obviously, we haven't got time to spend a lot of time on this. So I'm going to divide England into five places: southwest, southeast, Midlands, northeast, northwest, and then Scotland, Wales, and Northern Ireland too. In terms of the local church you're at, that's what I'm asking. So could we just have a show? And you might want to look around and see if people are in your patch. So southwest, who describe themselves as southwest churches, great. And southeast churches, yeah, quite a few of those. Midlands churches, ooh, lots of those. Northeast and northwest, yeah. Lots from the northwest, that's great. What about Scotland? Yep. And Wales? And Northern Irish churches, I don't think so many just yet. Okay, one more question for a show of hands is, which of you are from churches where you already have an ESL program, an ESL ministry of some description? And the second question will be, which of you are here because you may be thinking of starting it up? So first one, those who already have. Any in the room? There are a few. Okay, so there's lots of good experience here already in the room. And we're going to tell a couple of stories in a minute. I'm guessing there are more stories that you can tell. But what about churches who are thinking of doing this? You don't have to be thinking about it seriously, but you're thinking of maybe doing this. Okay, that's great. Yeah, great. And I'm sure there are other hands, people here for other reasons, like I couldn't find the room I was supposed to be in. or I'm Maura's brother. That's him. Yeah, or whatever. Yeah, so just to tell a couple of stories. And I want to tell the story of a Polish guy, great big muscular bodybuilder called Marcin, who came to the UK in that early wave when the borders were open to Polish people. And he settled in a town, and there was an FEIEC church there. He heard about English classes at the church, actually through his wife, who was far less touched by the gospel than he was. She sent him along. He was from a rough old background, lots of divorces in his family, lots of heavy drinking, army service. He was a tough guy. One of the first things he noticed when he came into a church English program was that people were happy. He couldn't understand that both the teachers and the helpers, people who welcomed him on the door, were nice and happy and pleased to see him. So that made a massive impact on him. So then when somebody said, "Would you like to come to church?" his heart was warmed enough for him to come. And even though it was really different, he couldn't believe there were no sort of, not much art. It was a very Protestant church. He was warmed. Of course, his English was helping him to engage. When somebody said, "Would you like to do a Bible study?" and went to his house with him and prayed with him, he couldn't believe he could do that without the priest. And he said, "I started to have feelings that I never had before." Obviously, the Lord was touching his heart. Long story short, he ended up going back as a Christian, going back to Poland and just wanting to share the gospel with everybody he met. So that's Marcin's story. And I think there are other stories that we could get from the room, but Maura's going to tell a story too.
Yeah, so Liz came to Britain in 2020. She came to join her husband, who'd been given leave to remain. And she arrived at the airport with her son and her little daughter. And during their separation, her husband had talked to her and said, "I've changed." But he hadn't really said very much more about that change or what it was. But said from the moment she met him at the airport, and these are her words, she said she saw an authentic and absolute positive change. And husband had been coming along to church and he had found the Lord. He was at the beginning stages of finding the Lord. And she started to attend with him and the family. And very straight away, she was really motivated to learn English. She'd been a lecturer. She wanted to learn English. And she went around. We were a little church plant. She went around everybody saying, "Can you teach me English?" And of course, everybody was full to capacity and couldn't do it. But the suggestion was made that we started a Bible storytelling club in English in our home over lunchtime. And very quickly, we had five Muslim ladies, actually one of them was a believer, looking at the Bible stories together. And from the beginning, said, "Oh, I only came for the English. I love the English." But as we moved from one story to another story, she began to compare the God she was hearing about with the God she'd learned about in the Quran, and it didn't match up, and she couldn't understand it. And as we finished the New Testament, the Old Testament, and moved into the New Testament, she said that she had a profound change. And she describes it like this. We were looking at the story of Jesus in the boat with the disciples in the middle of the storm. And she said two things happened. One of them, she realized that Jesus was just like her. He slept, he was tired. And number two, she realized that Jesus was nothing like her, that he had power over nature and authority. And she said she had a physical response to that. She got hot and cold and she didn't know what was happening. And she said from that moment, she believed that Jesus was the Son of God. And her life began to change. She began to experience people that were praying for her, that those prayers made a difference to her life. And she began to talk to the Lord herself. But very quickly, her husband got a job in Oxford and they moved away. They joined a little local church and they were discipled there, which was wonderful. And they really grew in their faith. And today, it's 5 years on, they are really active in their church. They love the Lord. But I think the thing that is most wonderful about this family is they have a heart for other Iranians who are coming here, who are really struggling with that idea of who is God, who is Jesus, who is the Son of God. And they are best placed to be able to share God's love with those people. So how do we get there? I was just recently reading a report by a guy called George Lapshinoff. He works for Theos, which is like a think tank. It's really, if you get the chance, go into it and have a little read. But he says churches can afford to take a person-centered approach to build deep and meaningful relationships and are able to act as bridges to the local community. Now, many of you, I'm sure, have been involved in teaching in local government schools English language, and it's a wonderful provision, but you don't get the opportunity to build relationships and friendships in the way we do within our church families. And it's not just about us and our English classes, it's about that bigger church picture. They come in and they're part of a bigger body, and we share that and we develop relationships that way. So Dave and I would like to just tease out some of the practical things, looking at more formal classes and then maybe looking at how we might set up more informal classes, ICAFs.
So this is the nuts and bolts stuff. After thinking about stories, that's what we all want, isn't it? People from the nations to come to faith and be joined to our local churches. Now thinking about how we actually get there. Half the hands that went up, you're already doing it. So those of you who are thinking of doing it, quiz those guys. Those of you who are thinking of doing it, let me say this to you. I think probably 90% of what you need is already in your church. What I mean by that is if you have your own buildings especially, it's slightly different if you're hiring a hall, but still not impossible. You've got warm buildings, welcoming spaces, you've got mingling areas, you've got tea and coffee facilities, you've got breakout rooms full of tables and chairs, you've got people that speak English, you've got people that want to share their faith, you've got a broad range of skills, some who could say, "Oh, I could never be a teacher." Maybe they're right, maybe they're wrong. You've got people who can open a door and put their hand out and say, "Welcome." You may have creche facilities if you want to do things really big. You don't need to, but you may have that kind of thing. You'll have somebody that can register people, take money, a kind of bookish type person. You'll have people who love to serve tea and coffee. And you'll have people who love to tell their story. So I think you've got pretty well everything you need. The only thing you might need to do is buy a whiteboard. I used to say, and dictionaries, but you can forget that now. They've got it on their phones. But you might need to train a teacher. But if you scratch around, either in your church or in other local churches near you, you can probably come up with a Kelter or Tessel trained teacher. Or if you can't, it will cost you 1.3 grand. So even that, of course, then you need to know what to teach, which is the next big thing. And we'll talk about that a little bit later. Eleanor said that when we came back from Ethiopia, we came back to our sending church, Carey Baptist Church. So I just want to describe 2009 Carey Baptist Church classes for you, just by way of thinking what it might look like. The first thing was to make contact with internationals, and the church congregation was great at that. And just to say, would you be interested? What kind of services? A bit of a survey of the area. Of course, everybody wants English classes for the reasons that Maura has just indicated. So then it was planning it. Who from the church can do it? I'd say this, don't ever start anything if you've just got one or two specialist interest people. Make sure it's a church-wide thing, across the church. The whole church is involved. At least they know that you're planning something. Not everybody needs to be involved, but everybody needs to be praying about it. And a wide number of church members need to be involved in it. Otherwise, it will fizzle out. It will wither on the vine if it's a specialist interest project for just one or two. So make sure you've got a team. Why not launch a pilot? That's a no commitment either way thing. So at Carey Baptist, there was a 6-week or 8-week, can't remember, pilot program, probably through the autumn to Christmas and a natural break, or maybe in the spring with Easter as a natural break, where you could just take stock, go back, talk about it at eldership level, maybe at membership level if necessary, report back to the prayer meeting and just think, was that good? Should we carry on doing that? And that gives you we've not heard of a church yet that's done a pilot and hasn't wanted to carry on, but it just gives you permission to think, well, maybe this isn't for us, because it's not for every church. And Maura's going to outline in a moment another option. But Kerry, it seems good to carry on. There was some tweaking on the mornings. There are other church ministries using the buildings. So we ditched Tuesday morning. That was the ladies' meeting. Wednesday morning, Thursday morning. Lots of people with kids. Why not go 9:30 till 11:30? They drop their kids off at school. They come to class. That worked really well. 2 hours, little break in between, mingling time. Tuesday, Wednesday, option for people to stay on for lunch and hear the gospel in various formats. That's how it worked, and that's what... But we asked the church, who can come up with a name for this English club thing? That's what Stu calls his, English club. And somebody who wasn't involved in the ministry said Bridges, because English is the language which you're going to walk over, and the gospel's going to walk over, and friendship's going to walk over. So that's what it looked like. And it worked. You can do it in your church. Maura's going to describe a resource, less intense version, if you've perhaps got a smaller church.
Well, since Dave's mentioned Carey Baptist, sorry, we're just using you a lot today, but I thought I'd just talk about how ICAF was set up in Reading. So it was a CAF initiative, a cafe initiative, and it actually was set up to try and meet the families of the people that came to the English classes. So they wanted to just kind of extend their reach a little bit. They wanted to do something that was quite easy and attainable. And so three churches in the area that were using English at the time got together and decided that they would work together to produce something. And they put a rota together so it wouldn't become a burden to anybody. And they shared the responsibility of running an ICAF together. And the ICAF was just a space where people could come and they did activities, English language activities together. And it's they looked for some seed funding, and they got 3 years of seed funding, which allowed them to provide coffee for everybody that came. And it started off in Tesco's in Sainsbury's, and then it moved right into the centre of town to Starbucks. And they did that intentionally so that they decided they would have it on a Saturday afternoon when people had finished shopping at 5:30. They had the invitation to come and bring their families and have a cup of coffee or tea, a really nice one from Starbucks of their choice. And the people in Starbucks were really accommodating. Many of them were speakers of other languages themselves. They loved seeing what was going on. And it became a meeting point for all kinds of things. And so it was set up for 1 hour. They came in, they played games. And then as friendships grew, they started to offer the opportunity to hear something about people's faith. And that took on lots of different forms. But at one point, they did Christianity Explored, the international version. And Starbucks said, hey, we've got a screen, we'll bring it out. And they showed it. And other people were in the building at the same time. And so we got a bigger reach than we'd expected. We did that for several weeks. At Christmas time, they allowed us to bring in a little piano, electric piano. And we sang carols during the evening when other people were there. And so we were known within the community as this group of people that cared about internationals. And that group is still going today. They are still meeting. They've moved where they're meeting, but it's still happening. And it's a wonderful initiative between churches. And many people have been drawn into the church through that as well. So our question is, can anyone do it? And Dave's already said, yes, we can all do it. And so we thought we would perhaps invite people, some people that have done it already. And we'd love to invite Julia and Stuart. Stu works part-time with us, but he's a pastor in Birmingham. And Julia and Stu are going to interview each other. So come on up.
Yeah, thank you. So as Maura said, my name is Stu. I'm a pastor for mission at Grace Church Sturchley for 5 days a week. And one day a week, I work developing things in the Midlands with 219. And Julia and I have known each other for, I don't know, maybe 18 months now.
Yeah, just over a year, really.
Yeah. So, and we are from kind of neighbouring FIEC churches. So I'm going to ask Julia some questions about how you started your English club. So first off, Julia, what was it that motivated you to start your English club?
Well, my English club is very young. We've been going for about 7 weeks. So we're a baby English club. But yeah, I started thinking about it about just over a year ago. So it was in the summer of 2024. Two things, really. The opportunity. We had a big influx over the last 4 years or so of Hong Kongers into our church. Also some Iranians, some Kurdish folk as well. And these Hong Kongers, some of them are Christians, some of them are not Christians, some of them are searching, others are kind of, you know, husbands and wives of people who've come along. And we felt that they, because there's quite a number of them, their English was limited. They were struggling to integrate in the church. They didn't feel very confident, a lot of them. They thought their English was awful. In most cases, it wasn't as bad as they thought, but they didn't have the confidence to mix with English speakers. So we were thinking, oh, is there something we can do to help these folk to feel more part of the church so they can integrate? And also for us to be able to reach out. We did do a Cantonese Bible study, which went really well, but the kind of folk were asking, what are we going to do next? And we thought, we don't want to do everything in Cantonese because we want to integrate the people who are coming with to be all part of one church. So that was one of the motivations, just the need, the opportunity. They came to us. We had these people. What do we do to help them? Second thing was, during that summer, there was the riots that happened. If you remember following the Southport stabbing, and there was a lot of kind of anti-foreigner, anti-migrant, anti-immigration kind of feeling around. And it really didn't, I felt really burdened that as Christians, what can we do to counter this? I don't want to just sit quietly and not, and feel bad about it. I want to move towards these people. You know, the Old Testament, it talks a lot about welcoming the stranger, love the stranger among you, the foreigner. And I thought, what can we do that is actually moving towards these people? I mean, a lot of them were coming into our church, but there's a lot of folk coming into our community. How can we move towards them with love and welcome? That's kind of what put it in my mind, really.
So you thought that you wanted to move towards particularly immigrants in your community with love and welcome. So how did you go about kind of preparing to do that?
Okay, well, I'm a primary school teacher by trade. So I can teach. I've got a lot of experience of teaching, and I know a bit of English grammar because we have to teach it, but I've never taught adults, and it was really intimidating. The thought of, what could you do about? I don't know if I can do this. So I started off on Google. That's where you go first. And I thought, right, what are there at TEFL courses you can do? And you know, what can I do to equip myself to do this? Because I have no idea really where to start. And as I was Googling stuff like English language classes, churches, combinations of words, I came across the 219 website. Oh, thank you, Lord. Because I was reading through it, seeing the resources that were there. And I thought, oh, this is exactly what I need. This is exactly the sort of thing I'm thinking. I felt totally ill-equipped, had no idea really what I was doing, didn't know anybody who was doing that kind of work. So came across the website. They put me in touch with Maura. Turned out, yay, she lives in the same city as me. Yay. So we met up. And she then put us in touch with you, Stu, who literally was 20 minutes down the road doing the work already, which was like, okay, this is good. So I also talked with a friend, and she is also a primary school teacher, also felt burdened to do the work. When we met up together with Maura, it was wonderful. Maura, you've got such a passion, you are fount of wisdom, but I was somewhat overwhelmed on the first two or three meetings because she was sent so many things and I thought, I don't know where to start. And so we said, let's take our time on this. We're not going to rush. Actually the Hong Kongers were like chomping at the bit. Yeah, we want to learn English. But we said, we're just going to take our time and we're going to start in a year's time. Like, so September 25, we're going to give it some time. We want to plan it well. We want to have a clear vision of what we are doing, what we're not doing. We want to talk to the church leaders. We want to talk to the members, get everyone on board, get a good team, as Dave was saying, get a good team behind us. So we said, right, slow up. We're just going to take our time. So I did a 6-month course. It was a bit cheaper than, it was 150 quid. But other courses are available. I mean, it was just a basic one, but it's given me some really helpful things. And we were looking, we had, this book is great. If you're thinking of setting one up, we read this book and gave us lots of things to think about. But it felt a bit abstract. We thought, what does it actually look like? I don't know what it looks like. So that's what put us in touch with you. And we messaged you and said, we knew of the church, but we hadn't met before. I said, Stu, is there any chance we could just come along once and kind of visit and just see what your group is like? So we came along. That dovetailed, I think, with your group being a bit short of help at the time.
Yeah.
So, and Maggie and I loved it so much. We ended up going back once a month at least.
Yeah,
and
at least once a month.
And I got dragged into teaching once I'd finished my 6-month course on. So I actually had some experience teaching his group when he was off on holiday or something.
Something like that, yeah.
But it was great. So actually we didn't have the pressure of organizing the group, but we were seeing how it worked and building relationships with some of the folk in your group and we all live in neighboring communities, yeah, yeah. Really. Some of the folk who went to your group were actually coming to our church.
Yeah.
And you then advertised our group, and some of the folk from your group now also come to our group because they desperately want to do English classes the whole time. So it was really great, actually. Knowing your group was really helped us to kind of get our heads into, this is what it looks like. Yes, we can do it. Yes, even though we started from literally zero, it helped us to see, yeah, okay, I could see how that could work in our setup. We might do some things differently, but a lot of things I could see how it could work. So.
Yeah, and it was great to be able to kind of work together. It was really interesting for myself, as somebody who's been running a class for about 5 years now, to work with Julia and to talk about, oh, well, this is why we do things like this. This is a thought process that we've gone through. And to kind of give you some help to say, here's the mistakes that we made at the beginning, and here's a way that you can shortcut those. So it was great. You were able to do a course, do a little bit of personal preparation, build a team within your church, excite the church, and kind of come and see it in action at Grace Church. And so you've been going for 7 weeks now.
Middle of September we started. Yeah,
not a long time. But what have been some of your joys and some of your challenges through the last 7 weeks?
I think there's challenges wise, it's just the feeling of inadequacy that we're very early in this. And I say this, a couple of people from our church have sat in on our lessons and they're all very encouraging. And the Hong Kongers and the Iranians and the others, we've had an Afghan lady come, they're all very encouraging and they, you know, very thankful and very appreciative, which is wonderful. But we still feel, we're like, new to this, are we doing it any good? And I had particularly had that I was teaching about countable and uncountable nouns. Anyone who's done the English language, we've only been doing it for a couple of weeks, why did I do that? But anyway, it's a really hard concept. I did my best, and we also do idiom of the day, and the idiom was spill the beans. So I was explaining what spill the beans means to the And one of the Iranian men came up to me and said, I'm going to spill the beans. Oh dear, what's he going to say? He said, in Iran, I'm an English teacher. I was just mortified because I didn't feel my lesson had gone very well. But he was very gracious. He said, I've come to learn. It turns out actually he'd come along with an Iranian guy who's a Christian who wanted him to hear the gospel. And we did our, we do, as Stu does, a Bible overview, Bible story and discussion after our English input. So that's the challenge, I think. There's a huge need for it. So I think I was nervous about being swamped with people, but the Lord's brought about 25 people around, which is wonderful. And I thank him for that, really. Joys, it feels like the Lord is just doing something. And although we feel inadequate, it's like we've kind of got to step out of the way and just, okay, we'll facilitate, we'll open up the building and do the English language teaching, however badly. But the Hong Kongers who are Christians are bringing their friends, are really owning this group and are sharing the gospel with their friends through this. We're just facilitating that. Yeah. But also some of the Muslim folks who are coming along, that he's already worked in them. They're already want to know. They want to stay for the Bible input and stuff. And I think my faith has got to catch up with what God is doing, because we had an evangelistic series of events at our church in October with a guy called Nate Morgan Locke, who's great. And he was doing a coffee morning. And I thought, well, we've only been going for 3 or 4 weeks, but we'll invite our English club folk and tell them it's a listening thing. It's going to be Christian. We made sure they knew what it was. And someone said to me, how many chairs should we put out for your guys? I said, 8, maybe 10. And we had like probably 30 people come. All the Muslims came. Wow. The Hong Kongers all brought friends. We had the talk on a translating app. So they were all on their phones, but they were just able to access everything he was saying. We did a bit of pre-teaching as well. He gave us some really hard words. Culture wars, explain that. Wow. But it was amazing. And I just thought, my faith's got to catch up with what the Lord's doing, because it's a real opportunity. The other encouragement has been the team. We thought, oh, we're going to have to go and ask people. And we thought, oh, they've done a bit of teaching and they've done, and we could... Actually, God just brought people we hadn't thought of. Some of the guys who have got very limited mobility. One lady comes in her wheelchair. She's amazing. She parks up at one of the tables and the students love her. One of the dads said, oh, I've got my son on a Thursday morning. Can I just come down with him? So he does. And the little boy, if he's awake, plays with another little boy, the Afghan boy, who kind of comes. We've had retired folk coming along. Just, it's been such a joy of people who've said to us, they're so excited about the ministry. And they said, I didn't think there was anything else I could do to serve because of my physical limitations. I didn't think I could do, but they're really excited about the relationship building. And and the internationals are coming and supporting as well. So it's very exciting. I still feel inadequate, but the Lord's at work and it's a great opportunity. I would, being at the start of the journey, I'd really recommend it.
Thank you, Julia. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much, Julia. You've made me excited all over again, and I want to start up a new class. That is really exciting. So we would just love to show you a few resources of ways we might be able to help you, and we thought we'd divide it into three bits. So maybe there are some of you who are here today, and I think you indicated that earlier, that are just beginning to think about doing English classes. And Julia's done all the work for us already. We would recommend that you get Sow to Reap. It's got, I think, just about everything you might need. Any question you have on setting up classes or ICAFs, putting together volunteer teams, thinking about your ethos, your vision, and getting that all together. And something that Julia said was they prepared well. We found that churches that prepare well go forever. So the church in Kerry is now how many years into your classes? 16 years. They teach at 4 different levels. They have a creche. and it's still going. So if you prepare well, you will reap the benefit of that with time. So we would really recommend that. If anybody at all wants to contact 219, we love to talk with you about where you're at, where you might like to go, what's suitable, what your demographics are like, who's in your area, what would be the best fit for you. And we have several people that would be happy to do a Zoom call with you to talk further about that. If you're somebody that's already doing English language and you've been doing it for a while and you've perhaps got to a place where you think, oh, I'd really love some new resources, well, we would really love to recommend these books. This is Start to Speak and So to Speak, and they're made for busy people like you who don't have a lot of time to put into preparation. But you can look at this. There's lots of different topics in the book. There, each chapter has about 2 hours teaching material in it, and at the back there are all the materials for you just to cut out and use, ready to take and run with these things. This one's slightly lower level, this is kind of mixed level, and they may just spur you on to other things as well. We never say just use these things, it'll bring other things across your path. And most of the lessons, I think probably Julia and Stu would say this, are eclectic. You get things from all over the place. So maybe those are helpful for you. We do have a little brochure here that perhaps we could get Mary to just pass out for people. It's just got lots of information on what's available out there. And then maybe you've been doing English language for a while and you're beginning to think about, how do we share our faith? How do we get to that point of talking about the Lord Jesus effectively with people? Is Jane McNabb here? Jane, I'm so happy you're here. So many years ago, I don't know how long ago, we collaborated with Jane and Kirsten, and they had developed a Bible storytelling technique for Nepali women at a lower level. And they'd done that, and we collaborated together and we worked on that. We took all the goodness of the material they'd written and we put it together in a set of Bible storytelling materials. So the first one is the New Testament, and the second one is the Old Testament. 10 stories in the first, 15 in the second. These materials are life-changing, literally. Jane, we're forever thankful for these materials. And they've now been made into animations so that you can use them with different levels of students. But most recently, somebody in our team called Jonathan Norgate has worked on something that people like you have asked for, and something that I wish I'd had when I started out. And it's this book called The Rescuer. So The Rescuer was written to sit alongside the Bible storytelling materials, and it accompanies the same chapters, but each chapter focuses in on one bit of the story. So the first chapter is creation, and then each chapter either introduces a topic or a question. So for instance, the first one's creation, second, what is a human being? Third, what is wrong with people? Fourth, sacrifice, disaster, childlessness, power, freedom, laws, and failure. And then it starts off by looking at a Christian worldview for each of those questions or topics. And it directs us back to what the Bible says about these things. And then alongside that, because people said, we come to tell the story, but we really don't know where people are at who are coming from other worldviews. We don't know what lens they're looking through. We don't know how they approach scripture. And so Jonathan has introduced in each chapter 5 different cultures or worldviews. So each one either has an Islamic, a traditional Chinese, Buddhist, Hindu, and scientific materialism. And he's looked at each of those and he's created key points that somebody coming from this background, they will be looking at that topic through this lens, and this is what they will believe. And it helps you to just see where they're coming from and then have the confidence in the word of God to talk through that efficiently. I wished I'd had this. It's been a really great book. And there are some little activities in it as well that you can use alongside either the transcripts in the book or the animations. So I highly recommend that. And then just one other very quick one. This one is our only book where we've connected the secular with the spiritual. And so we have 60 proverbs from around the world at the beginning. And each proverb is connected to loads of activity, icebreakers, really great for ICAF, informal type things. But it kind of moves through to a middle section where it looks at, I don't know if any of you have read Daniel Strange's Magnetic Points. He looks at, yeah, a few of you. So we use those to connect the proverbs with these magnetic points. So the magnetic points are questions. It's from Bavinck, who is a theologian, who said all religions are asking the same questions. And so it links these proverbs. It starts to kind of, it's a tool to dig a little bit deeper into those, into those areas. So it's things like totality. Thank you. Totality, the way we connect. Norm, the way we live. Deliverance, the way out. Destiny, the way of control. And higher power, the way beyond. And it looks at those things and it starts asking those questions. And then at the end of it, we push a little bit further and we look at five of the I am sayings that connect with these points and try and address some of those I am sayings. What's Jesus really saying? So that might be helpful as well. And so we would love you to connect with us in any way. If you've got any questions or want to talk further, we'd be happy. There are some books here, just come in and, there are other brands as well. We've got lots of other books that are really good for you to look at. And I do really want to just recommend Via Nations, or an American organization. This book about welcoming migrants into the church is excellent. It's got some really good practical helps that you could start off if your church is just beginning to think of things. You could start off with this. Great studies. They will also connect with you directly and come and speak. And they've written a really good book on parenting children with a global perspective. And they have children's materials that go with this. It's really good material. But there's lots of others. Just come and have a look if you like.